Hello everyone, this is Mario, just doing a quick sound check. Dwayne, can you hear me okay? Hi everyone, this is Mario. I am managing the call today. I would like to do a sound check. Steve or Dwayne, can you hear me okay?
Hi, this is Dwayne.
Welcome. Can you hear me okay?
Hi, Dwayne. This is Steve. I can hear you well.
Oh, good. You can hear me.
Hi, Dwayne. This is Mario. Can you hear me okay? Hello, everyone. This is Mario. I'll be managing today's call. Can you hear me okay?
Hearing you, Mario.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I was actually trying to speak through the AC, and I can hear actually some people have joined as well. It is actually right now 1700 UTC. Dwayne, would you like me to start a call? We have a few people actually have joined and a few others who have sent their apologies.
Let's wait one more minute or two. I know Brad is trying to join also.
All right, thank you. Hello, this is Mario. Did somebody else join the line?
Yeah, this is Brad. Sorry, I was late.
Oh, hi, Brad. Welcome.
So at this point, is it just Peter that's having trouble, I guess?
I think so. Let me send him actually the number where he can dial in.
Okay.
Hello, this is Mario. Is this Peter?
Yeah, hi, this is Peter.
Hello, Peter. Finally, we have you on board. So welcome to the
program. But this is cumbersome. I'm not having this trouble with Adobe Connect usually. So sorry for that. I have no idea what it is. But I'm in now.
Yes. Thank you for your feedback. We will raise actually a ticket to investigate a little bit more on any issues if happening through the Adobe Connect. So sometimes it's better just to dial in to the bridge and connecting for sure. So I think actually we're just waiting for Peter and Dwayne. Would you like us to start the roll call of the teleconference?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So welcome everyone. Good afternoon, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the RSEC teleconference call on 22nd May 2017 at 1700 UTC. On the call we have as participants Dwayne Vessels, Jim Reed, Brad Burt, Kim Davis, David Rangerbar, and Peter Koch. We have apologies from Bruce Mundi and Carlos Martinez. On the staff side, we have Frank Bien, Steve Shen, and Mario Alaman, myself, who's doing the call management today. I would just like to please remember all the participants to state your name before speaking. That will help us actually to get better transcription services and speak loudly and clearly. With this, I would like to pass it over to you, Dwayne, to begin the call. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mario. So the agenda today is pretty short. The only thing really we need to do is review the state of the procedures document. And well, I guess first we need to accept the minutes from the previous meeting and go over the action items. So Mario, can you bring up the action items from our last call?
Sure, absolutely. Thank you. I will read the action items right now. And I would like to just share it on the screen, actually, to everyone have it. On action items from the previous teleconference call on 4th of April, 2017, we have the first one, staff to edit and publish the minutes from 28th of February, 2017 teleconference call. Mario to make mailing list archive public starting on 18th April, 2017. Dwayne, Steve, and Mario to collect and discuss feedback to include in the operational procedures. Mario to review the process for making changes in the charter and consider creating a study/working groups. Staff to work with the chair on the operational procedures document. And staff to edit and prepare the minutes from 4th of April, 2017 teleconference. With these, actually, these are all the action items we have from the previous call, and we have all gone through them so far. Over to you, Dwayne.
Okay, so these are all complete. Mario, do you have, should we add some time at the end of this agenda to talk about what you learned about making changes to the charter? Do you have something
sure
to talk to us on that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So we have a tab with Dwayne Vessels a few weeks ago and discussed about doing or investigating more about creating a study on working groups. And so far we have decided that there is no need to revise and to create a study or working groups so far. In the meantime, actually, we'll basically be going to learn and investigate it even more. But unless there is a need to create one working group, we can move forward with this.
All right, thanks.
You're welcome.
All right, next we should approve the minutes from our previous meeting. Has everyone had a chance to review those? Any motions to approve those minutes?
DeWin, this is Steve. I think Peter just raised his hand.
Oh, I missed that. Go ahead, Peter. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It was maybe my fault. I didn't really fully understand the previous message about starting a working group. Could you elaborate one or two sentences on that?
So I think on our previous call, we talked about changing the charter, and I had brought up something which I was 100% comfortable with at the time, revolving around the word, there's a word content in the charter, and so that led to a discussion about things like, does RZERC have permission to change its own charter, what's the procedures for doing that, do we need a public comment review period, and so on. And also on the call, we talked through some of the changes, and after that discussion, I felt that, you know, I sort of withdrew my a suggestion to make that change around the word content, for example. So at this time, I'm not sure if there are other concrete proposals or changes that could be made to the charter at this time.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. I remember the discussion we had in that report that I think Steve gave. There was mention of a starting up a working group, and I'm not really sure I understand what that was. Like a working group for starting the charter, and then you agreed that this is not necessary at the moment. Do I get that correctly?
Well, I think there was a proposal that if we were to change the charter, that we could do it in a working group.
Yeah, okay, that might. But so the action says Mario to review process for making changes and then consider creating study working groups. That's what's on the screen right now. And Mario and you decided that this was not necessary at the moment. Do I get that correctly?
Mario and Steve and I had a call afterwards, essentially, I withdrew my suggestion to make a change around the word content.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not aware of any other proposed changes at this time.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Okay, so that takes us back to approving the minutes. Can I get a motion to approve?
All motion. Brad.
Robert speaking. Second motion.
Kim here, I will.
Okay, thank you very much. So now it's item four, the RZERC operational procedures document, which I believe you all have had a chance to see. Mario will probably put it up on the screen here. Even Mario did a bunch of work on this since our last meeting, and I also gave them some feedback very recently, which I believe they have mostly incorporated. So I have a few things highlighted that I would like to discuss with everyone. Do others have, I assume others must have specific things they would also like to discuss. Does anyone want to mention a specific section that they would like to talk about before we sort of dive into the document? Okay, I will, I guess, sort of go through it section by section, and if there's something that you feel we need to discuss, please speak up. The introduction, I think, is pretty stable, and this text is probably almost verbatim from the charter. Anyone have questions about the introduction section? Okay, section two is again pretty straightforward. Talk about the membership. Section 2.2, it says that the committee members are appointed by the organizations they represent in accordance with their internal processes. When organizations appoint representatives to CARSR, they shall specify the terms of the appointment. And I added, I suggested to add the following sentence, which says, which could be no term limit or automatically renewing. So I wonder if anyone has input on that particular wording.
Duane, Peter raised his hand.
Oh, yes, Peter.
Okay, thank you. So first, this is, if I understand correctly, more or less copied verbatim from the charter, isn't it? From the initial?
Yes.
Okay, so so either we could just reference the charter here or make it visible and obvious that this is a copy from the charter, and we probably don't have to discuss these parts, but then I would not make any changes, especially in the change that you just suggested, Duane, because the choice of limits is completely up to the appointing organizations, if I understand correctly. At least that should be the case if I consider the discussion that led to the current version of the charter. And any changes or maybe even Mendes clarifications leads to an inconsistency between what we have in the operational procedures and what is in the charter or the mission statement, and I'm not sure that helps.
Okay. So are there any objections to to doing as Peter suggested, which basically copy the charter text and make it clear that it's included verbatim or that's basically what you're suggesting, right, Peter? Or to just not include the text and reference it. So the charter doesn't say anything about term limits of appointees. Agreed? Jim. Jim, we can't hear you if you're speaking.
Thanks, Dwayne. I'm having some comms problems here. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me?
Yeah, okay. This is a quick thing. This is just a procedure document, correct? I mean, how would you recommend referencing the charter for you know, it's a footnote or something? Or, I guess I'm curious how formal do you have to get this if this is just a procedure document?
So my, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. So my point here is that, no, probably we don't have to be overly formal, but we should also make clear that we do or don't change things that have been given upon us by the charter. So I'd rather have external references, and so that it is clear that the procedures document, this part of the procedures document, is actually not the output of the committee itself. It is there. It's the constitution, so to speak, or say charter, and then from there on, the details, the minutiae, are for us to decide. I mean, can go over these, but looking at this document, at the draft that we have, I think it's lots of copies from other places, especially the charter, and that may lead to confusion. At least I felt confused myself at one or two occasions.
Thank you. So I'll ask again. The charter has nothing to say about term limits, and I'm not hearing any support for adding descriptions of term limits to the procedures document. Is that correct? Not even term limits, but you know, nothing that would say that how terms may be limited.
Well, the charter gives this or delegates this to the appointing organization, and how could a procedures document that is guided or bounded by the charter then impose or specify, clarify, whatever word you pick, additional restrictions or constraints? And that's okay. The whole point here. I don't think we can, even with the best of intentions, we can't change the charter through the back door of the procedures document. The procedures can only be detailed to a level that the charter allows. Everything else needs to be changed in the charter. And what you suggest, Dwayne, I can understand. That looks like clarification, but I think the message was clear when the charter was defined that this should be up to the delegating or appointing organizations.
Okay. All right, so we'll take an action to remove the sentences about terms and make it clearer that this is, you know, taken from the chart. Section 2.2.1 describes how new RZERC members are brought into the committee and how outgoing members are essentially removed from the committee. I did not have any discussion points in this section. Does anyone else have something they'd like to discuss in 2.2.1 or 2.2.2? Peter.
Yeah, sorry, it's me again. So this is new text, isn't it?
Yes.
Because I didn't find that. And this is actually really going down to the details, so completely within the limits that I think we have here. I have a clarifying question for 2.2.1 that might be a typo but might be intentional. The chair or an executive point of contact from the appointing organization will notify the RZERC. And then the RZERC chair will then notify the committee, where the committee has already been informed by the appointing organization, or the first sentence should read that the organization is talking to the chair rather than RZERC as a whole. And it doesn't make much of a difference, except that the chair is a point of contact that is identified from the outside, and the organization's representative, sorry, the appointing organization might not have right access to the mailing list, so it should be, the point of contact should probably be identified in detail here. My second point here is that's a wording thing. the charter and everything else talks about members of the committee, and in 2.2.1 and 2 we're talking, or the draft talks about representatives. And if these are synonyms, then for clarity, I suggest to stick with one name and not change this over the course of the document.
I think we can easily fix both of those.
Thank you.
Jim?
Can you hear me now? Obviously, you can't hear me.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. All right, let's move on to section 2.3, which this is text that we've already wordsmithing, and again, I do not have any comments or discussion points in this knowledge section 2.3. Does anybody else? Peter, your hand is up.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so this time it worked in the Connect room. This is probably more or less a copy of what we already had agreed upon, correct?
Yes.
So last time, I think I made that suggestion on the list at one point in time. Due to our presence in different time zones, the 24 hours voting time, starting at some arbitrary point in time, most likely working hours Pacific time in the U.S., it might be a bit short. It worked this time, but could we extend that by another 24 hours, just in case?
Okay, so the proposal is for 48 hours. I'm fine with
that.
Okay. Okay, scroll down to section 2.4, which talks about support staff. And this is a very short paragraph. And here I have a question for people, because this is one of the places in this document where, when we talk about ICANN, we say ICANN the organization, to point out that it's different than ICANN the community. I find the wording a little bit cumbersome, and I sort of suspect that other committees don't maybe do this. So I'm wondering, you know, what people think, and maybe if there's any input from the staff about how we refer to ICANN the organization versus the community, or if we even need to make that distinction in the procedures document.
This is Steve. I mean, we could say ICANN staff, but I think the difference between organization, community, and the board is something that we are trying very hard to delineate. So I guess I can take an action back to find some suitable wording that is less cumbersome, but essentially conveys the same meaning.
Okay. So I know, Steve, in RSAC, we sort of have been a little bit more careful in our words when we talk about ICANN. Do you see that is this a trend in other committees too, or is this sort of unique to us at this point?
Well, I think it's unique to us at this point, because this is something, when RSAC works on the operational procedure, this careful distinction, you know, hasn't been really been pushed. Now I think distinction has been drawn. And we are at this point of time. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you for the. I see Jim is making suggestions in the chat. So, thank you, Jim. I think those are good suggestions, and we'll make sure to capture those. Okay, section 3 is you know mostly all new. The charter does say a little bit about meetings, but it's really pretty terse. In section 3, we are defining three types of meetings that RZERC could have: regular meetings, executive meetings, and public meetings. I do not have any discussion points for the regular meetings for section 3.1.1. Perhaps, does anyone else have anything to discuss in section 3.1.1? Okay, it doesn't seem like it. Let's scroll down to 3.1.2, which is the description of executive meetings, something that we've talked about on these calls a few times. And you know, the idea here is that RZERC can have executive meetings to discuss extraordinary circumstances that may require some level of confidentiality. These meetings may not be minuted. Minutes may not be published. Currently, in this draft, it says transcripts might not be published for executive meetings at the chair's discretion. And I'd like to get people's input on that wording. Peter, you have your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, so publication, first, I support the distinction between the two and maybe the third one, which we will come to in a few minutes. There's another section in the document that already covers publication of meeting recordings and transcripts and so on and so forth, so we should be careful not to duplicate these. Redundancy might introduce confusion again. But more to the point here, I think every party participating in the meeting should know upfront whether the minutes and transcripts will be made public. That's the whole point of executive meetings to start with, but also having it simply on the chair's discretion, and while I trust you, Wayne, we never know what happens. That should be agreed upon by the committee and at the start of the meeting, I guess.
So would you prefer some statement that says you know, the committee would reach consensus prior to the start of the meeting regarding publication of transcripts and minutes?
Yeah, that would address my point.
Okay. Yeah, and there's some In this first paragraph here, there's some repetitive phrases which I think we can easily clean up in an editing session. Any other? Kim, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't see your hand up there.
Hi. I guess my question, the section is that doesn't really have any detail on things like notice that needs to be given back for a meeting, what the quorum is for a meeting, and so forth. The regular meeting section just about it, there's some detail about advance notice to be given. I think there's your concern that an executive meeting could be called at very short notice with very few people attending to make decisions on behalf of the committee. So I'm wondering, does that need to be expanded upon a little bit, or constrain executive meetings to very specific purposes, i.e. mentioning the confidentiality aspect, but all other aspects of the meeting is considered to meet the same rules as a regular meeting? That's kind of my area of concern.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Would you be comfortable with the same level of advance notice, or do you think it should be perhaps higher for executive meetings?
I'm fine with the same level. I'm just in the back of my mind trying to think, would there ever be a circumstance where the executive meeting would be required because there's something that is very urgent? Would that be a basis upon which, could the ASIC ever be called upon to act urgently on a particular matter, I guess is the question in the back of my mind.
Yeah, I can see that too, but to me, in the above section where we talk about 14 days, in ICANN land, that's pretty short notice, I think.
Sure. Yeah. So I mean, absent any further ideas, just maintaining the same notice period, the same requirement for consensus as other kinds of meetings, I think is about.
Okay. All right. Let's go down to the next section, which is 3.1.3, public meetings. And this talks about, having public meetings likely to take place at the ICANN community meetings and reasons for doing so. This section is, again, not as specific as the regular meetings where we talk about advance notice and whatnot. So I'm guessing we can similarly put some text in here that says, the timelines for holding a public meeting and so on. Any other input on section 3.1.3? In section 3.2, this section is specific to the minutes and the recordings and the transcripts. And here again, we have the language that says the ARZRC chair has discretion, which we will change to consensus-based decision on publishing minutes of census meetings. Okay. Section 3.2.1 is about meeting minutes, and I think this is relatively straightforward. We've talked about this in a previous call. We have a section on minutes, on recordings, and on transcripts. Does anybody have something they'd like to talk about in any of those sections, 3.2.1, 3.2.2, or 3.2.3? Doesn't seem like it. Section 4 is decision-making and consensus. This is relatively short. An earlier draft that we were looking at was much more complicated here, so I like this a lot better. I like that essentially we talk about two types of consensus, full consensus and rough consensus. This seems good to me. Does anyone have input on the consensus part of this document? Oh, Peter?
Yeah, thanks. So I wonder where the precedent of this is. The only one I remember is a bit, probably is a bit bad precedent. That was the GAC that I think during the previous, the latest ICANN meeting tried to get around their consensus principle by defining three stages. I understand we have two on the table here. Three stages of consensus that ended up with one more or less being a majority. Given that we were, that this decision had been taken out of our hands by the chartering process, I am not completely confident that we can do this in the procedures document and quote clarify and thereby maybe escape the boundaries of the charter here. I think that needs a bit clarification.
Well, the charter is very terse on consensus, right?
Yeah, which means that what did people have in mind when they wrote consensus, and how far could we actually try to get there? As I said, people have tried before to come up with something that smells like a majority decision and still call it consensus, which is, in my reading, or which would be, I should speak in subjunctive here, definitely be not what the intention of the founding parents of the committee was.
So, Peter, would your proposal be to simply, you know, either copy the charter wording verbatim or just, you know, reference it here and not say anything more about it?
So, currently we haven't. So, let me ask a question. I'm just not sure where to go here. So, I wanted to bring this up. My point is that we haven't referenced. Or the draft procedures document hasn't referenced or hasn't made use of this distinction up until this point. So I see that in the next section, but what was the reasoning behind this? Of course, consensus should not enable a single individual to veto decisions. I guess that's the basic thing. But what was the motivation for this attempt to definition?
I'm not sure. Steve, do you know? I mean,
yes.
At one point we copied this from RSAC procedures document. I think is that sort of where it originated, Steve?
Right, Peter. I think Tran, who was involved in the chartering of the of the RZERC, said the CWG, when they were defining that, they did not want to go into detail on defining the consensus and rather left that to this committee to determine. So when we look at, you know, when we start drafting this section, we look at what are the consensus models that various parts of the ICANN community are using, right? So, you know, essentially there is unanimous, which is in this case the full consensus. There is consensus, which in this case is the rough consensus. And then there is, you know, divergence or no consensus. So those are the three levels. And there are, you know, different shades of those levels. And, you know, in discussion, you know, also looking at the, other procedures, and we felt, I mean, this two level probably, you know, best captures what the RZERC deliberation results could be. So that's why it's put here. So that's the context.
Okay, I'll take it from here. I think there are differences between, for example, RSAC with a wide variety of members and a large number, and RZERC that works with a system of representation or representatives from different communities. So the rough model probably has more rough edges than it would have in a committee of 25 or 30 people. But since I understand we don't have to nail this down today, we can leave it like that.
Okay. And we have a suggestion in the chat from Jim, so thank you, Jim. We'll capture that too. But let's move on to section 5, which is kind of long. It talks about how RZERC could receive proposals and consider them and so on. I think this is pretty good. I think if, you know, the overall the text kind of maybe stand to use a just kind of a copy editing pass. But I think the gist of it is very good. One thing that stood out to me, and I asked this to Steve and Mario when we were working on it recently, was throughout this whole process. We potentially end up with two periods of community feedback, community input. One during the proposal phase, so the community may advise RZERC on whether or not this is something that RZERC should take on, and then again on the the output, the recommendations, that kind of thing. Does anyone want to raise a particular point in Section 5 at this point? So my sort of impression of this is that a lot of this stuff takes a lot of time, and so as I sort of imagine us going through this, I see these as sort of very long processes, of interacting with all of the stakeholders and the communities and gathering input, perhaps from experts. And I wonder if other people have the same impression, probably perfectly fine. We need to be deliberate and careful in considering architectural changes to the root zone. But as written here, RZERC does not sound like a committee that can act quickly. Okay, looks like no input on this section. Down to the last miscellaneous items. There's a paragraph that talks about proprietary information and potential need to engage in non-disclosure agreements. I don't have particularly strong opinions about that. I think it's fine. There's a paragraph about conflict of interest, and it says committee members must provide statements of interest. And my question, I guess for everyone and maybe for staff, is since the members are appointed by external bodies, do we all need to, you know, then submit statements of interest specific to RZERC? What happens if you know, someone is appointed but they don't submit a statement of interest? Is that going to be a precondition for their acceptance into the committee?
Go ahead, Brad.
This just seems like something that's not appropriate here. That's just my opinion. These are appointed by the outside, by the community groups, so there's no statement of interest. If the groups want to do a statement of interest to find out who they want to appoint, that's up to them, but there shouldn't be one from RZERC. That doesn't make sense to me.
So Brett, sorry, you were saying committee members should not provide statements of interest, but the RZERC itself may provide one?
No. As I read this, and correct me if I'm reading this wrong, we're saying that since I'm now a member of RZERC, I need to provide a statement of interest, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so I am appointed by the group I'm representing. In this case, it's RSAC, right? So if RSAC wants to have some procedure to come up with how they appoint somebody to RZERC, and that includes a statement of interest, that's fine, but that's up to RSAC or the CCNSO or whoever else. But for RZERC to ask for a statement of interest from somebody who's being appointed doesn't make sense to me.
Okay.
Long way of saying, I think this should be removed.
I'm sorry. Which should be removed?
6.2 is what is right.
Well, but this 6.2 is in the charter itself.
The charter
says committee members must provide statements of interest that identify potential conflicts of interest in their committee service.
That's in the charter?
Yeah, it's in the charter. And that's why it's kind of, when we draft this, we have to look through the charter on this.
I think maybe, I mean, if it's in the charter, it's got to be there, but I think maybe the better way of saying that, you know, now that, how do I say it, the rubber's hitting the road. I don't believe it. You should have a statement of interest, but declaring any conflicts of interest would certainly make sense. But if I'm appointed, having a statement of interest, that doesn't make sense to me. But if it's in, you know, if it's in the charter, if that's something maybe we should look at changing, we can do that or not. Does anybody else see that?
Yeah, it stood out to me, which is why I brought it up. It's a little strange.
Jim raised his hand.
Oh, yeah, go ahead, Jim. I think Jim is stuck typing. Yeah, he's in the chat. He says that he's basically agreeing with Brad, if I understand that. So what Jim is saying, with respect to conflict of interest, we would trust the RZERC members to recuse themselves. Kim, go ahead, please.
Thanks. I think, you know, I would just look at statements of interest as just a way of pre-disclosing areas where you might need to recuse yourself. I don't think it's
part of evaluating whether you become a member of AZERC or not, because as discussed, that's an employment made outside the scope of AZERC. At a minimum review on a potential conflict they have, disclosing them just, you know, adds transparency and eliminate potential sources of tension when an area of discussion comes up. I personally don't see a problem with it. It's just another way of doing disclosure, whether we do it ad hoc on the fly or whether we use it as a mechanism to do it in advance. So it sounds like the decision's already been made for us, that declaring them in a statement in advance is part of the charter.
I'm guessing that every one of us already has statements of interest from other committees. Right? I mean, so it's probably just a matter of, you know, copying statements over from wherever to where.
I don't think you make this SOI to the committee. It's recorded in a central place somewhere on the ICANN website and then placed to the person and not to the role, if I understand correctly. But I'm happy to be corrected by any of the staff members being more familiar with this.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the statement of interest is really to identify, you know, it is the person, not the organization. So for example, like in the GNSO, they appoint someone, you know, to the council, and then, you know, a matter is being brought up, a proposal being brought up by a particular a registry or registrar, where this person, you know, maybe hired or consulted on that. So for that person perspective, they need to, you know, disclose that in the interest of, you know, transparency during the deliberation. So it's not, I mean, this goes back to another thing, are the, you know, the AZERC members, they are appointed by the organization. But do they represent their organizations when making decisions? I mean, is there a requirement that they have to go back and check their organization? Or, you know, they can just, you know, as committee members, make decisions as AZERC for the community here.
Pretty big question. I don't think we have time. Brad, do you have your hand up?
Yeah, I do. I think, I mean, I hate to say it, but I think we're spending a lot of time on what is a terminology discussion. And, you know, everybody said it here. I think, Peter, you said it. I know, Steve, you just said it, which is, we are using the term, from the charter, I get it, we're using the term statement of interest for disclosure. And that is, it's a terminology issue, right? There is a statement of interest, which is your interest in joining this committee or why I think I'm qualified. And then there is disclosure of conflicts of interest. But if we want to use an SOI here for disclosure, that's fine. But let's just agree with that and move on. This is a terminology issue, right?
Okay. So we'll take another pass at this section in an editing session. But we should wrap this one up, I think. Pretty much made it to the end of the document. The last section says, talks about review of the charter and the procedure document, which I think is pretty straightforward. So, with your permission, I'll wrap up this discussion of the charter, and we have a number of, you know, things to work on and get back to the list. The last item on our agenda is the date of the next RCEP meeting. I believe that previously we had agreed the monthly meetings on Mondays, like the third Monday of the month, which would put us on June 19th. Does that match everyone's expectations?
Say again?
June 19th is the next meeting, right?
I have no challenge there.
Okay, so we will schedule, we'll send out an invite for the next meeting a month from now, June 19th, and go from there. And with that, we adjourn.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Rose, thank you for joining this call. Please remember to disconnect all your family members.